Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You know, before we got talking here ahead of our show with Dean Bertram, and my co-host, of course, is Tim Swartz, I was mentioning the fact that on our premium show, after the Paracast, we don't have the language restrictions because we don't have the FCC. On commercial radio like this show is on, you can't use the seven deadly words. In fact, when I went to broadcasting school, I was told if you use one of those words even by accident, you will no longer have a career in radio. Of course, this was before satellite radio and Howard Stern, decades before, so we know how things have changed there. The other thing, of course, if you like trivia, is that the broadcasting school I went to was just up the street from the famous Brill Building on Broadway in New York City. The Brill Building is where they wrote all those famous songs of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Okay, so, you know, like Pleasant Valley Sunday, and You've Lost That Love and Feeling, and all that stuff. It's the Brill Building down the street from us. So, well, we are going to talk history again. Some people who listen to the Paracast wonder, why is this guy always talking about history? It's because we haven't learned from it yet. We still see the same mistakes being made in the UFO field. Today, still talking about disclosure, like Major Donald Kehoe was doing in his books in the 1950s, over 60 years ago. That hasn't changed. Are UFOs spaceships? That's what they were saying then. That's what many are saying now, although we've looked into exceptions. We're going to look today at a man that I think John Keel had considered the father of the flying saucers. And our guest, who's working on a movie documentary on this guy, Dean Bertram, will tell us more. What got you involved in looking into the background of Ray Palmer?
Thank you so much, Gene and Tim, for having me on the show. Firstly, I love the Paracast. It's such an honor to be here. What got me first interested is I did my PhD in the University of Sydney in the history department there back in through the mid-2000s. And obviously, when I was writing about UFO belief and studying UFO belief, I came across not just Palmer's writings, but people like you said, John Keel. He wrote a fairly significant piece in Fortean Times back in, I think, the winter 1983. You called the man who invented flying saucers, which I'm shamelessly kind of stealing for the documentary title, along with other people. Keel, in some ways, was beat to the punch. Menzel, the great skeptic, was saying that in 1963. Other authors at that time were saying, hey, we're already forgetting Ray Palmer, and he created all of this stuff. And when you go back and you look at the Shaver mystery, to begin with, if we go back to when Ray Palmer was an editor for Amazing Stories from the late 30s through the late 40s, and particularly in the period where he started running letters and then articles or stories by Richard Shaver, so much of flying saucer belief was already introduced in what's really proto-UFO belief, and that was the Shaver mystery, which proposed that there were strange beings living under the ground who had advanced technology. They were ancient beings. This also predates von Daniken, of course, but the idea that there was ancient spacefaring civilizations and these beings were still interfering with us and they had this incredible technology. And so when the flying saucers burst upon the scene with Kenneth Arnold's sighting in 1947, both Shaver and Palmer said, well, we've been talking about this in the pages of Amazing. This is really just, you know, kind of validation for what we've been saying. And then, of course, Palmer hired Kenneth Arnold, the first flying saucer witness, to write for his Fate magazine, which he'd launched in 1948, as well as before that, he paid him to go and investigate the Maury Island incident, the proto-UFO crash, really, the very first one. And so you can, when you look at that, when you put it into an historical perspective, you can see the influence that Palmer had on UFO belief, even before we were calling them flying saucers. In fact, the Amazing Stories issue that was on the newsstands in June 1947, the All Shaver Mystery issue, had a piece by Vincent Gaddis, the great Fordian writer who regularly wrote for Amazing, which was essentially talking about flying saucers before we had the nomenclature. So Amazing Stories was already talking about these discs in a popular magazine, or these spaceships, or these visitors from beyond the void, I think, as Vincent Gaddis called them, when Kenneth Arnold had his sightings. So Palmer was on top of this stuff from the very beginning.
Now, by the way, you could still buy a copy of a reprinted version of the first issue of Fate magazine, which was co-published by Palmer and Kurt Fuller, from the current publisher, Phyllis Galdi, at fatemag.com. I don't recall what the price is. It's not a lot. It's obviously also much better printed than the original, which was on pulp paper. And that paper, if you had an original copy of that magazine, would be mostly disintegrated by now. Such was pulp paper. It's really interesting to read that because when the magazine first came out, Palmer was still working for Ziff Davis. And so he didn't put his real name on the masthead. He called himself Robert N. Webster. And then I think at one of the sci-fi conventions, he admitted who he was, of course, after he had left Ziff Davis.
Yeah, that's correct. I think because the Shaver mystery had taken a lot of flack from the hardcore science fiction community, had written to Ziff Davis this extensive letter-writing campaign, even though the Shaver mystery had driven Amazing Stories to an all-time circulation high and made it one of the most popular pulps in the country. There were science fiction authors who thought science fiction should be pure fiction, I suppose, and they got very angry with the Shaver mystery. They were already angry with Palmer before that, incidentally, which I didn't know until I started looking into this documentary more, because they wanted a more cerebral science fiction. Palmer was very much that Buck Rogers, you know, spaceships and fistfights type of science fiction. So they already didn't like him. There was already what was called a fan feud going on. But the Shaver mystery was the nail in the coffin. And so when finally Shaver and Palmer essentially got cancelled, or at least the Shaver mystery got cancelled by the noisy negativists, as Stanton Friedman would have called them, writing into Ziff Davis, seeing the writing was on the wall, and also that Ziff Davis was moving to New York City and moving all its staff from Chicago, Palmer didn't want to do that move. He started, you're right, under a different name with Curtis Fuller. He started Fate magazine, and so it was a pretty smooth transition, I guess, for him to move the more Fortean aspects of Amazing Stories, which had been increasing in the last several years, into the new Fate magazine. So that's absolutely accurate.
Now, you mentioned Vincent Gaddis, whom I knew, because I had a magazine which we called Caveat Emptor, a paranormal magazine with some New Age focus, and Gaddis was an occasional contributor. We had some occasional interesting articles there. We had an interview with Ray Palmer, and you, in your preliminary version of the documentary you're working on, you have a picture of Ray Palmer seated in his rather lavish home in Amherst, Wisconsin, overlooking a river. And if you look at the background of that photo, and you won't see it there because we're not in the picture, it was taken by our old friend Rick Hilberg. And also there was Alan Greenfield, whom most listeners of the Paracast know, and also the late James Mosley, and me.
That's just incredible. Do you have any personal recollection of Palmer? I know I shouldn't be stealing the interview, but I'd love to hear if you have personal recollections of when you met him.
Well, I do, as a matter of fact. And I'll give you mine, and then we can talk about what got you into doing this documentary. Now, there have been a couple of books on Shaver and Palmer. There was one from Fred Natus, Man from Mars, about Palmer. Really good book. I recommend it. Mm-hmm. But we'll go back to 1965. So Jim Mosley and I are taking a trip to Chicago to meet up with some people. We met Rick Hilberg and Alan Greenfield there. We first visited Jacques Vallée. This is when he had come out with his first UFO book, Anatomy of a Phenomenon, and we spent about an hour with Vallée. And Jim Mosley was kind of an amateur psychologist. So after the session, we got back in his rented car, and he said to me, you know, this guy Vallée, you know, he's kind of wired there. He's got some problems. He was the amateur, I said. I have no idea. I've talked to Jacques a number of times since then, and I wasn't able to put a picture on that, but that was Jim Mosley. We then decided to go to Amherst, Wisconsin. And you, Dean, have been there, so you know it's, you know, way out in the wilderness. It's a tiny town in the middle of nowhere. But this show is not in the middle of nowhere because We're talking to Dean Bertram, and he is working on an actual documentary about Ray Palmer, obviously covering Richard Shaver and everything. We'll get to that in a moment. With Gene and Tim, you're in
The Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
Jose works on a farm. Safety is important. His boss calls 811 to determine where it's okay to dig. This protects Jose from hitting an underground line and from serious injury. Because Jose can't tell exactly where or how deep the lines are, he doesn't dig until 811 tells him it's safe. The most important thing is that Jose works safe and goes home to his family. For more information, visit farmsafe811.org. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, Jim Mosley's driving the car. I didn't have a driver's license, by the way, then. I didn't until I was 21 because I grew up in New York City where we had plenty of public transportation. And listen, if somebody else is willing to go behind the wheel. Why should I learn to drive? I had to. I moved out of New York. Anyway, so we drove from Chicago towards Amherst, and we got lost. We think we got lost. Jim said he had talked to Palmer the day or two before and got directions. And we couldn't figure out where he was. So we entered Amherst, and there was a service station, probably the only service station. If you think you've been in a small town, Dean will tell you later, Amherst was and is small, okay? So he goes up to the service station, and he announces, do you know where Ray Palmer's place is? Just out of the blue. Small town, right? He says, sure, here's how you get there. I'm serious. When we finally got to see Palmer, his wife greeted us. She had this very protective attitude towards Palmer because obviously he was slightly crippled. It was hard for him to get around. In addition to his condition from being in an accident when he was very young, he took a fall some years earlier, and so he walked haltingly. He sat down. I took out the tape recorder. I did an interview with him, about 20 minutes to half an hour. Now, the interview itself, I don't know where the tape is now. I've moved 3,000 times since then. I don't have the tape. If I can find the tape, I'll have it digitized, and you'll hear it on the Paracast. But right now, wow. It was a pleasant interview, and we talked about Shaver and his belief in Shaver, but also he was telling us, which is true, that Shaver spent a number of years in a mental institution, but nonetheless, he believed Shaver. That started a ruckus because Shaver didn't like that, and so he wrote a response when I published the text of the interview in my magazine. He wrote a response saying he must have been taken over by the Deros or something. Wasn't very happy with it. You'll get into all that later. Palmer seemed like a pleasant, personable guy. I talked to him a few times on the phone after that, arranged for some radio interviews with him. Shaver I got to know fairly well. We used to have hundreds of letters from Shaver. We had his rock books. We had a lot of contact with him. I interviewed Shaver probably a year before his death. And he was a very pleasant guy, lived in a small cottage in Summit, Arkansas. And his wife, Dorothy, served us a light dinner. Very pleasant. Very pleasant guy. You couldn't imagine meeting him that he had such strange, unusual, and what some people consider to be wacky stories. That's what I remember of Ray Palmer, except for one more thing. One more thing, and you can talk about that too, perhaps. In the mid-60s, Greenfield, Hilberg, and my old friend Marty Salkind from Brooklyn visited Major Kehoe in Luray, Virginia. That's where he lived. And the next day, we went over to NICAP's headquarters in Washington, D.C. NICAP in those days was managed by a well-known UFO researcher, Richard Hall. When the door opened and Hall knew who I was from a previous meeting, he said, you're not welcome here. Probably because I was working with Jim Moseley as a real employee of Saucer News Magazine. Huh. And then we called Palmer, and Palmer wrote an article about the episode, thinking what right did he have to be so rude to people. He called it, No Investigations Can Actually Proceed. In Flying Saucers magazine. Of course, that means NICAP, like Kehoe's organization. Did I remember enough for you?
It's just fantastic. Thank you for sharing that. Just amazing. I wish I could have been there, too.
You have to be very old.
I'm not quite. It's a little bit like Palmer's story. Do you know Palmer's story about Halley's Comet? It's a fascinating story. Yeah, when he was a baby, his recollection is when he was living in Milwaukee, that his grandmother held him up and showed him Halley's Comet when he was a tiny little baby. So obviously there's already a problem because few people can remember when they were babies. But when Palmer would tell this story, people would say to him, well, that's impossible because Halley's Comet passed beyond visual, you know, ability for us to see when you were still in utero, when you were still in your mother's womb. And Palmer recognized that. He admitted it in his autobiography, The Martian, I believe it's called, which he published in a book called The Secret World. The Hidden World is different, obviously. That's a collection of magazines. But he said, well, it's funny because people tell me that I couldn't have seen it, but I clearly have that memory. And he had that memory. That memory was so important to him. Later in life, he says in The Martian, his autobiography, that he walked back to that, he visited that house in Milwaukee, knocked on the door, and said, can I come in and just look out the front window? And he went there and he said, yep, that's the window. I remember looking out and seeing Halley's Comet. So even though he acknowledged that he couldn't have possibly been born when you could see Halley's Comet, to him it was still such a clear memory. And I think that's one of the wonderful things about Ray Palmer, is his imagination was incredible, and he was open to ideas that are normally dismissed as being impossible. And so he was able to help create and weave a fantastic mythology about flying saucers, about the Shaven mystery, some of which may or may not be true, all that may be true, all that might be false. But there was something about Palmer where he was able to take the imaginal world and present it as solid, as real, as something which could, you know, which was affecting us every day. So I think that Halley's Comet story is very telling about the man Ray Palmer was.
Really interesting about Palmer and his history and backstory in the flying saucer field, as it was referred to then. He also got in touch with Project Blue Book over the Maury Island affair, as you might recall.
Yes, because obviously we had a situation when Maury Island was investigated. I'm sure most of your listeners know, but when Palmer paid Kenneth Arnold to go and investigate that, and after he'd received news from Fred Crisman, who'd also written to Palmer back in the earlier Shaver mystery days, saying that he'd fought the Deros in the caverns during World War II, that Crisman told him about this UFO crash. I believe he sent some of the wreckage or the slag which spilled out of the UFO as it hovered above the shoreline, the Maury Island, to Palmer. And so Palmer had Kenneth Arnold go and investigate it. And when they called in Air Force officers, the two Air Force officers who investigated, took some of the slag with them, given to them by Fred Crisman. And when they were flying back to the base, their plane crashed and they both tragically died. So obviously this all of a sudden became something that the Air Force took serious interest in. So yeah, they investigated Palmer, they investigated Shaver, they investigated Arnold, and there's an early FBI memo from that period which essentially says, we think Raymond Palmer and Richard Shaver are probably the people who have invented UFOs, or who are driving the flying saucer craze, or words to that extent. So again, that's part of the Ray Palmer mythology. Ray Palmer's life is more amazing than any amazing story that was ever in Amazing Stories. It's just an incredible, incredible, fascinating tale.
And one thing we can look at here is his influence on the world of science fiction that you see today in space opera movies like the various Star Wars movies, Star Trek on TV, and Star Trek in the movies. We'll explain that in a moment. Dean Bertram, working on a documentary about the man who invented flying saucers, Ray Palmer, with Gene. And Dean and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
It's all too obvious. We're being distracted by meaningless news headlines. When you dig to find the truth, you discover that the American way of life is being threatened by the institutions we used to trust. It's easy to see the future holds more food shortages, systematic controls, and government overreach. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are preparing. They're taking steps to be self-reliant and investing in emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, makes it easy to get started and join the ranks with this limited-time offer. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and get their top-selling 4-week emergency food kit. Enjoy tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get new lower pricing this week on these 4-week emergency food kits. Secure at least one food kit for each member of your family. They ship free, too. Those who know what's coming are preparing. Smart folks, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. A report indicates former President Trump pressured Arizona's former governor to overturn the 2020 election results. The Washington Post reports during the presidential election, Trump called Governor Doug Ducey and encouraged him to find enough votes to overcome his loss in Arizona. At a rally Saturday in South Carolina, Trump declared he did nothing wrong by bringing classified documents to Mar-a-Lago. Twitter is limiting the number of posts users can read per day. Chairman Elon Musk announced Saturday verified users can read 6,000 posts a day, while unverified accounts can only read up to 600. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny opened with $24 million, and it's projected to make up to $60 million this weekend. But it's a slow start for a film budgeted at $300 million. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Now, the reason I mentioned that, and Dean, you can go on, is that when Ray Palmer took over Amazing Stories, it had been invented by Hugo Gernsback, and he wanted it to be fiction with a solid scientific basis. That's why science fiction. Palmer wanted adventure stories, kind of like in the spirit of Edgar Rice Burroughs, where, of course, you'd have the strong, silent hero, the scantily clad damsels in distress, strange creatures, things like that. Things that Edgar Rice Burroughs did when he wrote John Carter of Mars, Carson of Venus, of course, Tarzan of the Apes, okay? So that's what we saw. These adventure stories, a lot of the famous sci-fi writers wrote for Amazing Stories. And when they did the movies, not, you know, Monster on the Loose, but things like Forbidden Planet, Star Trek, it was space opera, where you'd have a crew of people from Earth or elsewhere flying through space, meeting strange people, fighting battles in space and on foreign planets. A lot of that kind of science fiction, space opera science fiction, which also led to Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers, all that, Palmer was one of the inventors of that style.
Absolutely, and he's been, it's a real tragedy that I think not only has he been forgotten by so many people in the UFO community, which is a community I'm probably more familiar with, but he's been forgotten in the science fiction community as well. You mentioned Hugo Gernsback, the founder of Amazing Stories before. Of course, there was a Hugo Award for many years acknowledging Gernsback's contribution to the science fiction genre. And you're right, he essentially created the term. He called it originally science fiction or something, and then it got shortened to science fiction. And also John Campbell, who was the editor of Astounding Stories, which was essentially the main, or Astounding Science Fiction, I think is what it was. And then that's what became Analog Science Fiction. So that was essentially Palmer's major, I suppose, competitor, and Palmer just wiped the floor with them. He dominated the pulp scene. He outsold, you know, Astounding at least 2-1, sometimes more, I think. But we recognize Campbell as well. That's a very prestigious science fiction award. But there's no award for Palmer. I did introduce one, but it's at a smaller scale at a genre and paranormal film festival I run in Eau Claire called Midwest Ridge Fest. And now we have the Palmer D. Orr Award as of last year, the Golden Palmer, just a pun on the Palme d'Or from the Cannes Film Festival, of course. But for the most part, science fiction has completely forgotten Ray Palmer, and you're right. This type of sci-fi we're used to going to tentpole movies now, and incidentally, including a lot of the Marvel stuff, a lot of the Marvel stuff you can trace back to Palmer as well. In fact, the Eternal storyline is essentially the story of the Darrow and Tarot. I mean, it's almost taken whole cloth from the pages of Amazing, not to mention the whole idea of distant spacefaring, you know, evil empires that come and clash with, you know, the heroes of Earth and all of this type of stuff. So, yes, in all of the Star Wars, in all of the Battlestar Galactica, because in all of the Star Treks and even the Marvel movies, Palmer's imprint is all over it. His influence is all over it. His taste is all over it. His famous refrain, he never wanted a story to be boring. If he thought a story was boring that was submitted to him, he would say, throw another body through the skylight, his giveaway line. So he was very conscious that he wanted to make stuff that was exciting, that appealed to a young readership. And in doing so, that's really what ultimately ended up getting the Shaver mystery cancelled, because, as I said, he'd already created this incredible animosity between his way of doing it and Campbell's way of doing it, and the type of fans who wanted that more sedate science fiction based on the scientific realities of today and extended a little bit and imagined what it might be like in the future. But that didn't interest Palmer. What interested Palmer was a good story.
Now, he also influenced comic books, and I'll give you one example. One telltale example, because the character, very loosely based on Palmer in one respect, that character was featured on recent TV shows Arrow, The Flash, and Legends of Tomorrow. And the character was portrayed by Brandon Routh, who also played Superman in Superman Returns. How does a guy who's just over 4 feet, a hunchback, become influential in a 6'2" hero? Well, somebody created a character called Adam for DC Comics. Adam was a scientist who miniaturized himself in a special suit and then did his superhero stunts. And the guy who created the character named him Ray Palmer, kind of a way of paying an honor to the real Ray Palmer. So we have the fictional comic book Ray Palmer, who could be either 2 inches tall or 6'2", or we have the real Ray Palmer. That's more of his influence.
I think it's all over, and again, unfortunately, he's been forgotten. You were right before about the Natus book, The Man from Mars, is a great book. I'm also a big fan of Richard Toronto's work. I think you've had Richard on the Paracast. I seem to recall back in the day hearing that, and he, of course, did War Over Lemuria, and he did Shaverology, and he did a couple books just on Rock Fogo, Shaver's Rock Art, which are just beautiful books. And so I think there has been, to a degree, a biographical re-interest in Palmer, or people who are writing biographies, but I still don't think it's penetrated the UFO community. I mean, you guys have your finger on the pulse of the UFO community probably better than anybody, and I imagine that you don't frequently talk to people who go, yeah, this is all, we can trace it back to Ray Palmer and Richard Shaver.
Mostly they want to live him down as much as he had influence in the field. In Flying Saucers magazine, for example, he had something called Saucer Club News. So if you have a Flying Saucer Club locally, many of these people were teenagers at the time, you published your announcement. Maybe you mentioned your newsletter, you had public meetings, whatever. Almost every person who is now a close friend of mine, I met through Saucer Club News. Really fascinating. Except for Jim Moseley. Jim Moseley I met because I bought a copy of Saucer News at the Samuel Weiser bookstore in New York, which had lots of UFO and occult titles in the 1960s. That's how I met Moseley. I met my first wife, Geneva, through a comic book called Forbidden Planet. I wrote a letter to the editor. She responded. And even though we're no longer married, we've been friends for many years. So Palmer Help me meet Alan Greenfield, Rick Hilberg, people like that. The show you're mentioning is almost 10 years ago. July 7th, 2013, with Richard Taranto. And Geneva's on hand with her remembrances. So that was a fascinating show. We'd like to get Fred Natus on, but he doesn't seem to like to answer letters.
Yeah, I haven't reached Fred yet either. I need to, though. I've talked to Richard multiple times just via email. He's been very helpful, to be honest. As is Doug Skinner, the literary heir of essentially of John Keel, who runs johnkeel.com. He's somebody who used to speak at the Many Shaver Art Exhibitions, which toured the country. I don't think he was involved in arranging them. I just think he spoke sometimes. And he wrote a fascinating cover article for Fate magazine, I think, back in 2005, which has a photo of an older shaver on the front saying, "What's this, a shaver renaissance or something like that?" And so he kind of foresaw, I think, because this is before either Natus's or Taranto's books had come out. Of course, Taranto had already been doing Shavertron for almost forever. But I think you, Tim, you, if I recall, you're the editor of the book Richard Shaver, Reality of the Inner Earth, which was published by the late, great Tim Beckley. And that's a fantastic book.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep, absolutely right. Tim had a pretty big collection of Shaver's writings. A lot of it had never, I don't think, had ever been published anyplace before. So we went through them and tried to find the most coherent ones, because a lot of his later writings just skipped all over the place, and put them together for that book.
I was totally oblivious to the fact that he'd had allegedly a Darrow abduction after he moved to Summit, Arkansas. I'd never heard about that until I read that book, and it's in there in Shaver's own hands, talking about how when he was rock hunting in Summit, Arkansas, which is where he moved to after he lived just outside of Amherst in Lanark, just down the road from Raymond Palmer. We can talk about that again a little bit as well if you guys want to, but it fascinates me that he was still, even after he got into his rock book phase, he was still having, up close towards the end of his life, still having experiences with the Darrow and the Terror.
Yeah, I think that particular piece was something that he had written for another publication and then was never used.
Hey, before we use anything else, Dean, Gene, and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you love mysteries, you'll love these two books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll learn about the strange beings that can look like us, but are not. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll see the hard evidence of UFOs that has been ignored or even hidden. These books will definitely blow your mind, and both are now available on Amazon.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of three major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is the process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in this free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call them toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, folks, if you followed Shaver Lore, I don't know how many people have. If I make a mistake on the show, it's because of the Telog rays from Medeiros. That's the reason why it's happening. You know, Shaver sent me in Geneva a lot of these rocks with some apparatus we could use to see them. And supposedly, these contain crystalline structures that recorded data. You can see pictures. And you think, well, that was kind of wacky in the 60s and 70s. And, of course, we look now at chips being made of silicon containing billions and billions of transistors. That's where we store data. So, in a sense, the rock books, in a very loose way, may have been influenced by that. As a civilization becomes more advanced, it wants to record information. And there's so much information, you have to make everything smaller and smaller and smaller. And I remember, for example, in the 50s running around with my transistor radio. It has 5 transistors. It has 6. Oh, my God. My iPhone has what? 10 billion transistors?
Yeah, I actually, speaking of the rock books, I've been to Shaver's property in Lanark, very close to the Ray Palmer property that you visited. I think when you were there in 65, Jen, he'd already moved to Summit, Arkansas. He was there from 49 until 63, and there's a whole story about behind why he moved as well, which is quite tragic and sad. But I visited the farm. I went there a number of times. Nobody seemed to be at home. Somebody was finally at home, and they were going to let me shoot there. And then they changed their minds because they said they didn't really like what Shaver stood for, and they didn't want to be involved, and they were Christians. Not that I think that should have anything to do with anything. You can make a documentary about somebody you don't agree with. When I stood there and I thought, this is where Shaver first discovered his rock books. In fact, this is where his wife, Dottie, first discovered the rocks, which she laid on Shaver's desk. And according to Shaver, she said something like, there's pictures in these rocks. And he just ignored her. And then when he looked at it a couple of days later or a couple of weeks later, it became his driving obsession from that period in the late 50s up until his death in 75. But standing on that farm, maybe it's because I'm so interested in the material. Maybe it's because all I've done is think and read and breathe and talk about Richard Shaver and Ray Palmer for the last 6 months. But it was an uncanny feeling being at the home of Richard Shaver's longest firm. I believe he lived there longer than anywhere else in his life, and also at the place where the rock books were first discovered.
Did you ever get to talk with anybody from Palmer's family?
I've met who you've also had on the Paracast in a fascinating interview. Your interview with Raymond B. Palmer is an incredible interview. Anybody who hasn't heard that should go and dig that out of the archives. I think that's about 10 years old now, but geez, it's a great interview.
Yes, we had Tim Beckley and Raymond B. Palmer, January 13th, 2013.
Yeah, it's a great show. Anyway, I did get to, it's funny, I found out where they both lived by pulling essentially title deeds, and the local historical society helped me a little bit with the contact for Raymond B. Palmer as well, but I'd visited his house a number of times and he hadn't been at home, and I finally was driving past to go to the Shaver farm while I was still going there, and I saw, you know, a man in his 70s, still looking perfectly healthy, working in his yard, and I thought, he's finally at home. And I pull my truck in, and I jump out. He doesn't see me because he's got a mower, like an edging kind of machine running, which is super loud. And his dog runs out first. In rural America, I mean, I'm obviously not a rural boy initially. I'm a city boy from Sydney, Australia. I'm always hypervigilant when you go somewhere and a dog runs out, because dogs are guard dogs, obviously. And I'm like waving and trying to get his attention. Hello, hello. And he finally sees me and turns the machine off. And I think, okay, I mean, this can't be great for him just to have some weird random show up on his property in Amherst. And I just introduce myself. Hi, my name is, you know, Dean Bertram. I now live in a county over from you. Just so you know, I did my PhD work in history of UFO beliefs, so I'm sure you know where this conversation is about to go. And he did, and he was very gracious. He was very friendly. He told me fascinating stories about looking for rocks with Shaver. Some of those stories he tells on, of course, your show as well. And it was just wonderful to get to meet and shake the hand of Ray Palmer's son. I hope he will be in the documentary. I still have to have another meeting with him. We're having later in the summer and discussing it. But to have Raymond B. Palmer in the documentary would just be, it would be a dream come true, to be honest.
It's too bad he didn't inherit his father's writing talent and be able to continue to produce that. When Palmer died in the 1970s, and I think he knew within a year of his death that he didn't have long for this world, there were lots of unpublished stuff that his wife put out for a while. So you could still get the magazines, as I said, at least for a while.
What I do think he inherited from his father is, I never met, as you were fortunate enough to, Raymond A. Palmer, but I've heard about the famous twinkle in Ray Palmer's eye, Ray Sr., Ray A. Palmer's eye, from a number of people, including Richard Toronto, from things he'd heard, including people I've spoken to in Amherst who knew Raymond A. Palmer. And there was that twinkle in Raymond B. Palmer's eye as well, along with, I think, an ability to feel different ideas about what flying saucers might be. I think often Raymond A. Palmer is dismissed as somebody who is somehow just profiteering off the Shaver mystery and off flying saucers. But my understanding, having researched fairly extensively now, when I did my PhD, I didn't research that extensively. I was just more interested in the ideas than the individual. But from what I can tell, Raymond A. Palmer was somebody who had a genuine curiosity about the weird. I mean, he published the WAPSI Bible as well. He thought that maybe this had something to do with the flying saucers. He thought maybe Shaver's interpretations of physical Darrow and Tarot were just misinterpretations of a spiritual reality. But he was also happy to play with other hypotheses about the saucers as well. And speaking briefly for that probably 20 minutes I've gotten to speak with Raymond B. Palmer so far, I found that in him as well. I found him quite open. I found him, he didn't seem to be, you know, have any serious doctrine he was trying to push. He had a genuine curiosity. And people listen to that interview on your show. I think that genuine curiosity and lack of a doctrinaire type of approach to it is apparent there as well, as I believe it was in Raymond A. Palmer, Raymond B.'s father.
Well, Raymond A. would also publish different ideas and then see what the readers thought about it. And I met up with an old friend of Palmer's, Otto Binder, well-known sci-fi writer and well-known comic book script writer. And he wrote the scripts for the original character, Captain Marvel, before it became known as Shazam. In fact, allegedly, I haven't had a confirmation because Otto's been dead for many years. He wrote about a character called the Scorpion, a villain. They adapted that when Republic Pictures filmed
The Adventures of Captain Marvel in 1941. And I know there's been a couple of Shazam movies with Zachary Levi in recent years, but they aren't one-tenth as good as this 1941 movie serial that you could see in all 12 chapters on YouTube free. In fact, the flying scenes are pretty darn decent also. For 1941, and the guy who played Captain Marvel, Tom Tyler, a Western star, looked the part. More so, I think, than George Reeves looked the part of Superman. And anyway, to get back to Otto. Otto told me a couple of times that Palmer would deliberately write outlandish or unusual ideas in his magazines to get the readers to react, even though he may not have taken them seriously. But that was a big point he made. Oh, by the way, Otto Binder also invented Supergirl.
And Otto Binder, I think, is who Ray Palmer got Space World magazine off when he later acquired that magazine. It was one of the later mags that he published.
That's correct.
But speaking of serials, I mean, all of that, I didn't know a lot of that about Binder, by the way, just fascinating. But I don't think many people have talked about the fact that there was a Gene Autry serial in 1935 called The Phantom Empire. And The Phantom Empire is very chivalresque. It deals with this civilization that you reach by going down, down, down into the caverns via a secret elevator, who can look at the surface of the Earth with their machines, who fire weapons to, like, crash planes and do other things, who kidnap surface beings who know too much about them. And while there are other recognized influences on Shaver that he himself talked about, he talked about A. Merritt, for example, the author of The Moon Pool, which is an interesting fantasy sci-fi type novel, that, or horror novel, which also impacted H.P. Lovecraft. But Shaver talked about that being his major influence. In fact, in his second story in Amazing Stories, after I Remember Lemuria, the next story where they kind of drop the shield that it's just somehow an ancient racial memory, that Shaver's actually been involved with these beings, he talks about Merritt being a major influence. But all of that aside, yeah, the serial, if nobody's seen it, I think it's free on YouTube. It's like the copyrights elapsed now.
We've got more to come with Dean and Gene. And Tim, you're in.
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience, so I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
What if people always acted the same way they do when they're driving their cars?
Good morning, Mrs. Blanchard. How may I help you?
I'd like to cash this check.
Sure.
I'll just get my pen.
Come
here.
On, lady. Get a move on.
Goodness.
Where'd you learn to bank anyway?
Ooh.
Whoa. Don't you give me that look.
It sure wouldn't be a very friendly place.
What kind of candy do you want, sweetie?
This. No, this.
Pick something already. Come on, honey. We're holding people up. How about this kind?
No.
What is the matter with you people? If you're not going to do something, I am. Get out of my way.
Every day, drivers and their families all across the country are killed on the roadways because of road rage.
Wasn't it a beautiful wedding?
Oh, yes, and they make such a lovely couple.
Excuse me, is this the receiving line?
Yes, it is.
Hey, he cut in line.
I'm a friend of the bride. Do you know the
group? Hey, now, you cut in line.
Buzz off.
Oh, yeah?
He hit that nice man.
That'll teach you to cut in line, you jerk.
Stop this senselessness of road rage. It's time we all drive with the same courtesy we extend to people in the rest of our lives. A message from the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety.